Hi everyone, this is Naz and this is the Gender Not podcast. So I'm quite excited because this week I'm going to introduce you to a new member of the team.
Hi everyone, I'm Katie.
Katie's joined the team and she and I are going to have a chat for this week's episode. We're going to talk about some stereotypically masculine ways of hiding emotion and how, as women, we find that really problematic.
Yep.
So Katie, you've got an interesting story about this.
I think it was an aha moment where sort of the world just kind of came into focus. So I actually thought about it when listening to one of the previous episodes when you were talking about diplomacy being this very masculine topic and men kind of want to talk about it and feel more intellectual and so on.
I feel like that's going to haunt me because some editor's never going to ever hire me again because it's like I talked shit about like every single political report.
No, but then you clarified later and I think it makes sense. No, and your point was emotions are really complex and actually an intellectual topic.
Well, intellectual thought is not necessarily so much more hard and more important right. than dealing with emotions.
Right, so I was thinking about this moment. So I was watching a political talk show, and I don't remember what the question was, but the answer, you know, they were talking about U.S. military abroad somewhere, and how the answer was, well, you know, we have to show our military strength. And it was kind of like, okay, next question. That was it.
It was a given.
It was a given. The person asking the questions was like, okay, great, next question. Like, that was a standard talking point that was accepted. And I just thought, wait a minute, that's it? We just have to show that we're strong? That's the answer? That's this big diplomatic kind of answer that's accepted? And it just gave me this flash reminder of kind of being on the playground as a child and kids, lots of boys, you know, kind of showing their, I don't know if it would have been masculinity as a kid, but their strength, and that was important for their identity. Or, you know, we have to pick on, you know, these could be any kids, we have to pick on this other kid so that we show that we're strong. We have to show our strength in numbers. So much of these decisions diplomatically are about kind of showing strength. When, wait a minute, couldn't we just, you know, let's have a conversation.
Let's just chat it out, like this podcast.
And I get that there's historical context that's important here, and it's not as, that the world isn't as simple as that, but I also kind of had, in this moment, I was thinking, but couldn't the world be simpler? Like,
this is all
a result of decisions we've made as society, you know, as humanity, that we have to show our strength. Why?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the thing that relates back to emotions is, like, that's coming from a place of insecurity. Well, we need to, you know, protect, and we need to show that we're strong. And it means based on fear that we won't appear strong. And that's an emotion. And that's, so that's all about covering that emotion.
Yeah. So basically you're saying this politician or diplomat's response was completely emotional, but it was just taken as a given. Like, yeah, we've got to show that we're strong. And
yeah.
That's it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, it's interesting because I can think of two examples that feel really similar. Example number one, when I was an undergraduate at university, I think I was around sort of 19 or 20. I was involved in the student paper. My boyfriend at the time, he was involved in the students' union. Some of my friends were on the debate team. I had friends in the paper. And they were all very involved in the whole student politics thing. So they were constantly going to meetings about, like, you know, the student union's budget and what money should go for what sort of service or what kind of project or whatever. And these were all guys. And they'd go to these meetings and get really heated. And, you know, I'd be sitting there and my boyfriend would come and complain to me about my friend on the debate team who disagreed with him about what should happen with this money. And then my debate friend would complain about my boyfriend or someone else. And after a while, I realized that these people, then it's not that they're really passionate about, like, this money and what should happen to it, or like this decision about the student union or whatever. They don't really care about that. They just don't actually get on with each other. And all of this is an excuse for them to just, like, play out their beefs or something. And it just kind of felt a little bit like there's a bit of a stereotype of, like, a bunch of, like, bitchy girls going to a party and then bitching about each other afterwards. And I was like, you guys are doing the exact same thing, apart from it's just dressed up as, like, dealing with budgets and, like, dealing with the constitution of something.
Right, totally.
And that was a proper penny drop moment for me. I was like,
I mean, you were a student, you weren't in the student union, but they were representing you. Did it make you question, like, their ability to make these big decisions and lead. That was what happened to me. I was thinking, oh, this makes me nervous that these are the types of answers we're giving.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. No, I didn't think that at the time. I just thought it was just nonsense. I was like, oh, God, this is just like, basically, this is a masculine form of gossip. That's what I thought it was. I was like, this is basically gossip and people bitching about each other, but doing it under some grandiose guise of like the budget, you know?
Right.
And that really, really annoyed me. Example number two. So I talked about like having friends who were debaters. A while ago, I had an argument with a friend, and I remember this friend getting very angry with me about some sort of random concept that he was trying to get into a debate with me about. It was just a random word, and he was just really getting debatey with me. And at one point during this conversation, again, I had another penny drop moment of he is angry with me about something. And instead of like discussing what that is, we're having a debate about like some random concept. And I remember after this happened, I called a really good friend of mine who was a very accomplished debater back in the day. And I said to him, I was like, do you think debating is just about like men who can't deal with their feelings? And he just burst out laughing down the phone. And he was like, oh God, that's exactly what it is. And then he said to me that, you know, once I learned how to deal with my emotions, I just completely lost interest in debating. And this is someone who was like really big on the debate scene. And then he just basically said, to me, it is boxing for nerds. It's like if you're an intelligent guy and you've got lots of anxiety issues and stuff, you know, you can't go punch someone. So instead you join like the debate team and you get into all these arguments about, you know, supposedly about some, I don't know, philosophical concept or some like political situation. But it's not actually about that. It's more like, it's like an excuse to vent.
Right. And so, and proving dominance over someone.
Yeah, exactly, as well. Again, like you said, it's not like, let's have a conversation to explore this topic. It's like, no, let's have a debate, which, it is boxing, isn't it? But it's an intellectual form. I think it's specifically that penny drop moment was that this is an emotional response. We are having a debate because someone is angry and doesn't know how to deal with it. And then it just brought up every other instance I could think of, you know, just debating culture. And it's not just, I know maybe when I talk of debating culture, that sounds niche. It kind of isn't, because a lot of like political culture comes from that, whether it's like journalists who write opinion pieces, whether it's like public intellectuals, whether it's like politicians, like your example of, you know, political conversations happening on the news. It's just that same theme of...
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think...
being intellectual or thinky or action orientated to cover an emotional response.
Yeah. I think also there's a huge avoidance. So I'm thinking about this concept of like showing dominance so you can avoid showing emotion. The other side of it is, you know, avoiding any sign of vulnerability. Maybe it was because I was in a pretty gender balanced workplace with, you know, women bosses and so on. But I remember a couple years ago, I feel like it was something to do with Hillary's record, actually.
Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, Hillary Clinton's record. Maybe it was about the emails, I don't know. I just remember asking a friend of mine at the time who works in politics, political communications, saying, I don't get it, but wouldn't there be some power in someone coming and saying, you know what, yeah, I messed up. Isn't that powerful? You know, because to me, I thought, you know, the examples that I was existing in, you know, that I was observing, I felt like were pretty widely accepted as when that happens, once a leader accepts that they've done something wrong, that it's powerful. And this friend of mine was just saying, no, I mean, in politics, you just can't do that. And it's true. I mean, you think about Bill Clinton finally admitting, you know, this affair with Monica Lewinsky and stuff, that was so explosive because you just never basically admit to being wrong. And that is about avoiding at all costs vulnerability. I mean, also he did, just something widely accepted as morally wrong and so on. But just when we're talking about even political missteps and saying, you know what, I messed up and actually I can be a better leader for you because I've learned from mistakes, to me that's so much stronger. But that's just not how it's seen.
Yeah, well, there's two things that come out there. One is that being able to own up to your mistakes is a really confident thing to do.
Yeah.
When someone turns around and they're like, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. How can I rectify that? That's a sign of confidence and maturity.
Right.
So it's, yeah, not only is it about avoiding vulnerability, but it's like, well, you talked to fear earlier with the first example you gave.
Right.
So it goes into like fear and basically just being immature.
Exactly. Giving any leeway in saying that you've done anything wrong could open your case up for... in your campaign or whatever it is, for vulnerability and the fear of what could happen then.
It's almost like if you admit that you were wrong, it's like you're saying you're not good enough. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. And there's an expectation to have to never make mistakes and to never have any flaws, and that, I guess, I don't know, then your competitor can say, well, I never made a mistake, so therefore.
I feel like over the past year, I felt like the world is run by teenage boys. You know, like all these examples of like politicians, CEOs, and like other sort of powerful people in society who act in these ways, which are, you know, all about being defensive, attacking other people, like you say, not being able to like admit you're wrong or have a conversation about something. It's all about asserting dominance, which like is really immature. And it just, yeah, I just feel like the most powerful people on earth often act like a bunch of teenage boys, really.
Right, well, especially right now, like right now, because Donald Trump won the election and he's just so petty, it's so immature. Like, I don't even know the relationship to emotion. It seems it still comes from an insecure place, which is a fear of vulnerability and just fear in general, fear fueled. But yeah, of course, in this moment, because he's the president of the United States, it seems like coming into focus, like, oh, there is so much of that culture present of leaders being immature teenagers, teenage boys.
When they could just sit down over a pot of tea and have a chat.
Yeah, just have a chat, Donald.
Yeah. I think what really bothers me about this realization I had that the world seems to be run by very immature boys is that the examples of people we're giving, you know, these are powerful people who actually have an impact on everyone else's lives.
Right.
I have very strongly felt this about Brexit, where I feel like that entire situation is a bunch of guys who never got over their beefs from university, and half of them even went to like secondary school with each other. And it completely goes back to the example I gave of when I was a student and seeing those fights take place. Yeah. I feel like Brexit, it's the same type of people like 30, 40 years down the line, where now they're actually in charge of government. And again, they have a bunch of like personal beefs going on, and the entire country has to sort of deal with the consequences. It's not even like an intellectual exercise of, oh, people need to be more mature. It's like this sense of like throwing immaturity around in a way which everyone else has to pick up. And that makes me really angry.
Yeah.
For me, it's not even an abstract thought of people should be more mature and that will be nice. It's like through this immaturity, real people have to suffer, like entire countries have to suffer. And that really, really pisses me off.
Yeah. I just wonder if it's like, if it has to do with this accumulation of these interpersonal relationships between politicians, or if it's that these individuals in their lives are just not ever processing emotion.
Well, I often find interesting also looking at the sorts of people who end up in various professions. That's often driven by personality.
Yeah, there's something inherent about politicians wanting to like...
Yeah, like politicians or like I said before, like people who are really into like asserting dominance, like intellectually or in some other way, like they go off into certain fields. Those are fields that have a lot of influence on society. So I feel like you just all need to chill out and have a cup of tea and have a discussion.
Just talk it out, guys.
Just talk it out. Admit that you were wrong. It doesn't matter.
That should be the new strength, is admitting you're wrong.
Some brands offer you low finance or cashback or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.